He never touched the women. He didn't have to. By day, Lucian Wolf was a cybersecurity consultant in San Francisco, slick, well-dressed, and forgettable. But at night, behind VPNs and firewalls, he became something else, a digital peeping Tom, a connoisseur of secrets. His obsession? Married women, bored wives, ring cameras, living room confessions, bedroom betrayals. If they had a ring cam by the front door and a husband with a late-night job, Lucien was already watching. He didn't hack for money or revenge. He hacked for the thrill, watching marriages rot from inside out, until he found them. The couple on Pine Street. She was beautiful, dangerous, always aware of the camera, even when she acted like she wasn't. Her husband? Cold, calculating, and watching too. What Lucien didn't know, this couple wasn't ordinary. They weren't victims. They were predators, just like him, and they had their own game to play. Only this time, Lucien wouldn't be the one watching. He'd be the one exposed. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Tap. Lucien Wolf liked quiet neighborhoods. Not the kind with kids playing in the street or holiday flags waving from porches. He liked sterile quiet, upscale, concrete, minimalist. The kind of place where people kept secrets behind soundproof walls and Bluetooth locks. He sat in his apartment, 27 floors up in a glass and steel high-rise in Soma, shirtless, espresso cooling beside him, laptop open on his thighs. The blinds were drawn halfway, the late San Francisco sun slanting orange through the slats. His screens bathed the room in a soft blue haze. Three windows were open on his desktop. Each showed a different doorbell cam, black and white night vision, with little timestamps ticking silently in the corner. 8:02 p.m., suburban Palo Alto. Mrs. Klein was yelling at someone off-screen again, something about the lawn service and why the dog's food hadn't been restocked. 8:03 p.m., Russian Hill, San Francisco. A brunette in tight yoga pants just returned from Pilates. Her husband greeted her at the door, a little too enthusiastically. Lucien already knew she was sleeping with their neighbor, and the husband knew too. That's why he overcompensated. Lucien grinned. 8:04 p.m., Pine Street. New feed. New thrill. Lucien leaned forward. The house was different. A sleek townhouse with a smart black exterior, tinted glass panels, and a deep vestibule leading to the door. The ring cam was installed professionally. Centered, angled down, wide capture. No glitches. The kind of detail only money could buy. He had found the doorbell ID in a hacking forum two nights ago, buried in a data dump from a private security contractor. Thousands of residential feeds. Most boring. But this one? It stood out. He couldn't say why. Until she opened the door. She moved like smoke. Slow, fluid, barefoot in a silk robe that clung to her hips. She wasn't startled by the delivery guy or anxious about who might see her. She lingered. Smiled, let the camera catch just a hint of lace beneath the robe as she bent forward to sign the tablet. Lucien sat up straighter. He tapped a few keys. The feed wasn't password protected, sloppy, or trusting. He started recording. Lucien wasn't a predator, at least not in the way people imagined. He never touched anyone, never stole, never messaged. His pleasure came from observation. From watching the way people fell apart when they thought no one was looking. He was surgical in his approach. He used compromised firmware to tunnel into ring feeds. Simple. He could watch and record without triggering alerts or log entries, even set up motion sensors to ping him when someone walked by. It was his nightly ritual. Wine. Silence. Screens. And now, Pine Street. Two nights later, she returned. Same robe. Same subtle seduction. A different man. Not the delivery guy. Not her husband. This one had a key. Lucien's pulse quickened. The man was older, athletic, well-dressed in a slim charcoal suit. He kissed her once on the lips, twice on the neck. She pulled him inside. The feed cut out. Lucien cursed under his breath. The ring feed had a delay. Maybe she closed the inner door. Maybe the camera's view was too shallow. He tapped the screen, then paused. Replay. Zoom. Enhance. There. Just before the door closed, a shadow moved behind the guest. A third figure. Unclear. Watching from inside the house. Lucien's fingers froze. The man wasn't alone with her. Someone else was already home. Over the next week, Lucien watched obsessively. Every night, new visits, new men. But she wasn't reckless. She was deliberate. The robe changed color. The seductions were paced. Sometimes she kissed the men outside. Sometimes she didn't. But always, the same pattern. The front door opened. She greeted them. They entered. The feed cut off. Always just before something important. Lucien started compiling files. He saved clips, named them by date and time. Built a timeline. She was too good. Too aware. She knew the camera was there, and she was performing. Performing for him. Or for someone. Then came the night the door opened. And he stepped out. Not one of her lovers. The husband. Tall, shaved head, trim beard, black turtleneck, black slacks. Lucien's first thought, military or private contractor. He didn't speak, didn't smile, just looked straight into the camera for 10 long seconds. Lucien swallowed. The man walked to the curb, took out the trash. Routine, normal, innocent. But his eyes, they were locked on the lens, knowing. Lucien hit pause, rewound, frame by frame. In the reflection of the chrome trash can lid, he caught something. The man wasn't alone. Behind him, just out of the door's edge, she was standing in the hallway, naked. Not by accident. Lucien closed the laptop and stood, chest tight. He felt something he hadn't felt in years. Fear. Who were these people? He couldn't stop. Over the next few nights, he watched every second of the feed. He ignored his job, skipped client meetings, let his phone go dark. And then it happened. He opened his laptop at 2:14 a.m. The ring window didn't load. He refreshed the browser. Feed unavailable. Camera offline or access revoked. Lucien blinked. He tried the VPN. Nothing. Checked the backdoor script. Gone. The Pine Street feed was dead. He leaned back, breath shallow. They knew. Someone had seen him. Then, 5 seconds later, a new notification. A message. Nice view from the 27th floor, Lucien. Chapter 2. Foreshadow. The message stared at him like a gun barrel. Nice view from the 27th floor, Lucien. It wasn't just a taunt, it was a mirror. Someone had flipped the lens. He was no longer the watcher. Lucien didn't move. He didn't breathe. The cursor blinked under the message like a heartbeat. His laptop's screen buzzed faintly, humming with static tension. He looked toward his window. The cityscape blinked back. Thousands of windows glowing in the San Francisco night. Offices. Penthouses. Bedrooms. One of them was watching him. Maybe all of them were. Lucien reached for the edge of the blinds. Stopped. No sudden movements. He unplugged the Ethernet cable, closed his laptop, yanked the battery on the backup rig, killed his router, stood in the middle of the room like a man trying not to drown in air. His hands were trembling, not from guilt, from the feeling that someone had just put a collar around his neck and gently tugged. 4 years earlier, Lucien learned to hack in college. Not in a basement, not on the dark web, but at Stanford. He majored in cognitive science with a minor in systems architecture, but what fascinated him more than any algorithm was behavior, specifically how people let their guard down when they thought they were in control. He wrote his senior thesis on the illusion of digital privacy. His professor called it paranoid but brilliant. The administration flagged it as potentially unethical research. Lucien smiled. He knew he was on the right path. He interned for a cybersecurity startup where he learned the mechanics of social engineering, pretexting, phishing, masking voice tones. He didn't care much about data theft or malware. It was about leverage, control. Later, when a wealthy tech client asked him to test his wife's loyalty by planting spyware on her devices, Lucien found his real purpose. Watching. Back in the present, Lucien paced his apartment barefoot. The hardwood floor was cool beneath his soles. He poured a drink. Didn't sip it, just held it. He'd covered his tracks. No login logs, no traceable VPN leaks. And yet, someone knew. It wasn't just a technical breach. It was psychological. He opened a secure shell and scanned for outbound traffic. Nothing abnormal. Then his secure phone buzzed. Unknown number. One ring. Then silence. He stared at the screen. Then another text appeared. Keep watching. The real show's just beginning. Attached was a screenshot of him, sitting in his apartment. From behind. Shirtless. His laptop in his lap. Lucien's jaw clenched. The angle, low, diagonal, wasn't from across the street. It was from inside his apartment. Lucien spun in a slow circle. No obvious cameras. No drones. Nothing on the bookshelf. Nothing in the smoke alarm. He stripped the place clean in 30 minutes. Bathroom vent. HVAC grill. Digital picture frame. Even the overhead light. Finally, behind the floor lamp, near the wall outlet, he found it. A pinhole lens, barely the size of a pepper flake, wired into the base of the lamp, embedded under a false sticker with a QR code. Brilliant, elegant, quiet. Just like him. But Lucien hadn't let anyone in. He hadn't ordered anything. He hadn't had guests. Unless 3 weeks ago, a cleaning service. Hired through a premium client referral. Supposed to be vetted, bonded, background checked. A woman and a man. Cleaned quietly. No small talk. He'd tipped them in cash. He couldn't even remember their faces. That's when it started. Lucien crushed the tiny camera with a set of pliers. Watched the lens splinter like glass under pressure. Still, he didn't feel better. He felt exposed. That night, he stayed offline. No laptops, no screens. Just silence and whiskey. He slept in a different room. Woke up every hour. By morning, he had a plan. He would flip it. He would find them. Trace them. Reverse the game. He knew the Pine Street couple wasn't random. They had known exactly how to bait him. That required surveillance, timing, psychographic profiling. These weren't amateurs. They had studied him. Lucien drove to Pine Street at 2:47 a.m. The street was hushed. Trees rustled in the warm spring air. A single street lamp flickered near the corner. The house looked ordinary. Too ordinary. No lights on. No cars in the driveway. No movement behind the tinted glass. He parked one block away. Walked slowly. Neutral clothing. Cap low. There was no ring cam at the front anymore. Gone. Wiped clean. Like it never existed. He moved past the vestibule. Looked up. A glint caught his eye. High above the arch, nestled in the trim of the overhang. A new camera. Smaller. Sleeker. Hidden. Infrared only. No visible lens. Lucien grinned. So we're both watching each other now. He returned home. This time, he didn't disable his laptop. He booted into an isolated OS. No internet. Air-gapped. Then he opened a program he hadn't used in years. REVERB. It was a worm. A deep crawler. Designed not to attack, but to listen. It burrowed into IP leaks, thermal camera metadata, Bluetooth handshakes. It was digital sonar. He didn't use it often. But now he needed it. He fed the Pine Street feed ID into the crawler and launched it. 2 hours later, it returned with partial location pings, bouncing across ghosted servers until it snagged on something real. A smartwatch. One of the men the woman had seduced wore a biometric tracker. Cheap. Easily breached. It had synced with a location just 2 miles away, time-stamped 2:11 a.m., after he had arrived at Pine Street. The house was empty. The players had moved. Lucien went to the new address. This one wasn't a sleek townhouse. It was a luxury penthouse in a downtown high-rise. He looked up at the building and froze. The same building he lived in. Different floor. Same architecture. Same security system. Same cleaning service. His skin crawled. He walked past the lobby. The front desk was empty, probably on a break. He checked the elevator access panel. Top floor, 31. Lucien lived on 27th. They were above him, watching him, living above him. He returned home in a daze. They hadn't hacked him. They had moved in. When Lucien stepped into his apartment, the air felt wrong. Not colder, not warmer. Just touched. He checked his perimeter. Nothing. But when he went to the fridge, he paused. His carton of oat milk was turned the wrong way. He never left it like that. He opened the fridge. Inside, taped to the back wall with a single strip of red duct tape, was a photo. An old one. Black and white. Lucien as a teenager, sitting on a park bench in Chicago with his mother. The photo had never been digitized. It had been in a shoebox. In his storage unit, miles away. They had been there too. Underneath the photo, written in pen, "Some secrets deserve to be seen." Lucien didn't sleep that night. He stared at the ceiling. Not because he was afraid, but because something inside him had shifted. For the first time in years, someone had touched his world. Not digitally, not abstractly. Physically, intimately. And they were challenging him. Flirting with him. Daring him. Chapter 3. Shift. Lucien wasn't the kind of man who fell into traps. He studied traps, deconstructed them, built better ones. But now, sitting in his own apartment with a cold photo from his childhood taped to the inside of his refrigerator, he realized he'd walked into one willingly, and it wasn't just a trap. It was designed for him. The next morning, Lucien went to the storage facility across the city, Unit 54-D. Climate-controlled, hidden under a false name. He walked in, flicked on the fluorescent light, and stopped. Everything looked untouched, on the surface. But the layer of fine dust that usually coated the floor was broken. There were faint prints, wiped smooth at the heel. One of his locked filing boxes sat open. Not forced, picked. Inside, the box was empty. That box had contained his personal surveillance logs, client targets, metadata caches, burner devices. He didn't need to check the rest. Whoever the couple was, they'd taken more than his attention. They had taken his secrets. Lucien returned home, locked the door, and poured himself a scotch at 10:43 a.m. He stood shirtless at the window, staring out at the skyline like he could read its thoughts. Across the street, a mirrored office building reflected his tower back at him. Rows and rows of glass rectangles, any of them capable of hiding a lens. And then, motion. Top floor. Movement. A woman, tall and slim, pulling open the sheer white curtain in a penthouse window. She paused. Even from across the street, Lucien could feel the pull. Her movements weren't casual. They were staged. She let her robe fall. Lucien didn't look away. She was watching him. He waited for it to end. It didn't. She held the pose, hips tilted, arms relaxed, gaze locked. Then, slowly, she raised a hand, just one finger, and beckoned. Come. He showered, shaved, changed, slipped into a gray button-down and jeans. Nothing too formal, nothing too eager. He didn't think about what he was doing. He just moved. At 11:18 a.m., he entered the lobby of the building across the street. "Can I help you?" the concierge asked, without lifting her eyes from the screen. Lucien smiled. "I'm here for Penthouse A." "Name?" "They're expecting me." The woman hesitated, then typed. "Go on up." The elevator doors slid open to a long, quiet hallway. Plush carpet, no music. White noise hum from recessed lighting. Penthouse A's door was already cracked open. Lucien stepped inside. It was a cathedral of minimalism, glass, stone, and black wood. Tall windows washed the space in natural light. Sculptural furniture floated in silence. There was no sound. And then he heard her voice. "You're early." She appeared barefoot at the top of the stairs, white robe, hair damp, eyes lined in faint charcoal. "I didn't set a time," Lucien said. "You were still early." She descended like water, each step deliberate, unhurried. "I know you," she said when she reached the last step. "No," he replied. "You know of me." A smile. "Lucien Wolf. Real name? Maybe. Hacker. Voyeur. Digital sadist with a god complex. Do I have that right?" Lucien didn't answer. "You watched me," she continued, walking past him. "You liked the robe. You liked the men. You liked thinking you were in control. You baited me." She poured a glass of something dark and red. "We invited you." Lucien tilted his head. "We?" A man's voice emerged from the shadows near the open kitchen. "Hello, Lucien." The husband. The man from Pine Street Feed. Same shaved head, same black clothing, but this time he held something in his hand. Not a weapon. A phone. Lucien's phone. His burner phone. He felt his stomach twist. "How'd you get that?" "Trade secret," the man said. "Let's skip the dance. You want to know why we pulled you in?" "I already know. You wanted to humiliate me, make me your puppet." The woman crossed the room. "No, Lucien. We want to understand you." She stood inches from him now, close enough to smell her perfume, something musky and dark, like sandalwood and secrets. "You watch people degrade themselves, seduce, lieutenant, cheat, but you never participate. Why?" Lucien didn't blink. "Because involvement ruins the truth." She leaned in, whispered, "Maybe the truth is you've never been involved in anything real." The room fell quiet. Lucien turned to the husband. "You could have exposed me. Why play this game?" "We don't play," the man replied. "We curate." "What does that mean?" "You collect secrets. We collect people." Lucien frowned. "You're a cult?" The woman laughed. "No, baby. We're an audience." She gestured to the massive TV on the wall. A video began playing. Lucien's apartment. His shower. His bed. Him asleep. Him awake. Clips from days, weeks, even last night. "You were never the only watcher," the husband said. The woman circled him now. "We want to see what happens when the watcher is made seen." Lucien stayed silent for a long time. Then he walked to the window and stared out at the city.
"You think you can control me?"
"No," she said. "We think we already have." The couple didn't ask him to leave. They didn't threaten him. They simply stepped back, gave him the room, and let the silence do the rest. Lucien finally walked out at 12:27 p.m. No one followed him, no one stopped him. But as he stepped into the elevator, his phone buzzed. It was a photo, a live still of him, standing at the window inside the penthouse, taken from behind. They had someone else watching them watching him. That night, Lucien didn't sleep. Instead, he opened a new file, a black window, a blinking cursor. He began to write. Subject: E and L. No surnames yet. Known locations: Pine Street, decoy. Penthouse A, confirmed. Apparent goal: reverse manipulation, voyeur as subject. Psychological breach via sexual dominance. Then he added one final line. Phase 1. Enter the performance. Chapter 4. Pressure point. Lucien wasn't easily shaken, but they were working fast. Within 24 hours of face-to-face contact, he could already feel it. The slip, the subtle loss of edge. It wasn't just that he'd been watched. It was that he'd been seen. Understood. And still, he hadn't walked away. Back in his apartment, he studied the footage again. Their footage. His own life, through their lens. He recognized the angle of the shots. hidden pin cams inside his air vents, behind the vanity mirror, embedded in the charging dock of his toothbrush. They hadn't just accessed his world, they had choreographed it, and now they wanted a reaction. Lucien didn't flinch. He responded the only way he knew how. He gave them what they wanted. The next day, he opened all his curtains. He let the sunlight pour in. Then he staged it. He made himself visible. He stood shirtless by the window for 15 full minutes, reading, sipping espresso, pausing every now and then to glance across at the penthouse where the white curtains remained shut. Then he stripped. Casual. Deliberate. He walked naked from the kitchen to the shower, left the door open, let the steam billow out. He wasn't performing for pleasure. He was setting a counter trap, a digital honeypot. Inside his firewall, Lucien embedded a signature packet, a pulse of code that pinged any attempt to intercept or mirror his outbound smart devices, a tracking beacon disguised as metadata. The idea was simple. If they were watching, they'd bite. If they bit, he'd trace. Hours passed. Nothing. Then, at 3:17 a.m., the trap went off. A phantom ping, an encrypted pull from an unnamed IP, masked behind triple-layer proxies, but one of the nodes had a weak handshake. Lucien drilled in. It wasn't the penthouse. It was a new location. Mission Street. An art gallery. He got dressed. Black hoodie. Gloves. Disguise mode. By 4:04 a.m., he was at the scene. The gallery was minimalist, anonymous. No signage. Floor-to-ceiling glass. Everything inside bathed in icy blue security light. And yet, one window was slightly ajar. On purpose. He entered. No alarm. No motion detector. The silence was sterile. White walls, black floors, abstract pieces on the wall. Some digital, some painted. But one installation stopped him. A room filled with screens. Each screen showed a looping clip. Of him. Of others. People undressing. Arguing. Crying. Masturbating. All unaware. All being watched. In the center of the room, a pedestal. On it, a note in black ink. Surveillance isn't voyeurism. It's art. But art only lives when the subject feels. Are you starting to feel, Lucien? L. He tore the note in half, but he didn't destroy it. He folded the pieces into his pocket. By morning, he was spiraling. They had resources, access, a physical footprint that went far beyond a Ring camera feed. And now they had a message. You are part of our gallery now. The next message arrived via drone. Literally. At 11:43 a.m., while Lucien was in the shower, a buzzing sound filled the apartment. He came out dripping, wrapped in a towel, to find a sleek black drone hovering outside his 27th floor window. It lowered, released a small package onto his balcony table, then zipped away. Inside, a phone. No model number, no branding. A custom build. It booted on its own. No password. Just a single app. Mirror. He tapped it. A video call request appeared. He hesitated, then answered. The screen lit up. The woman. Today she wore a white button-up shirt, unbuttoned to her midriff, legs curled under her on a leather chaise. Hi, Lucien, she said, with that voice that dripped velvet. No masks this time? He asked. She smiled. Do you want me to wear one? What do you want? Her smile widened. For you to stop pretending you're in control. I'm not interested in being your puppet. Oh, Lucien, she said softly. You already are. She turned the phone's camera. To him, a real-time image of Lucien standing there, holding the phone, staring into the screen. They were filming him again. I want to meet again, he said, jaw tightening. You already did. I want more. She leaned forward. Say it like you mean it. I want to understand what this is. She paused, then whispered. This is a mirror, Lucien. Everything you've ever done, watched, recorded, obsessed over. We're showing it to you, but inverted. Why me? Because you're perfect. You're not a victim,
You're a voyeur, but you're bored. You've been staring at screens so long, you forgot what real power feels like. She leaned in, lips inches from the screen. We're giving it back to you. Then the feed cut, phone dead. Lucien stood frozen. Later that night, he received an email. No address, no subject, just a line of text and a timestamp. Tomorrow, 7:30 p.m., 274 Cielo Terrace. Come alone. Attached, a short video. The woman in lingerie blindfolded, hands tied. But she was smiling. And behind her, the husband held a tablet, watching something. Lucien's old ring recordings. Lucien watched the loop three times. He should have reported them, blocked them, walked away. But his blood was warm now, his mind humming. They weren't pulling him in. He was diving in. Chapter 5, Secret Revealed. 7:28 p.m. Lucien stood outside the gated entrance of 274 Cielo Terrace, a private residence perched on one of the steepest ridges in the city. The kind of address money whispered about, but never spoke aloud. The gate buzzed open before he pressed a single button. He stepped through. No cameras visible. But he knew better. The house was brutalist. Slabs of stone, floor-to-ceiling glass, sharp architectural angles. Every inch of it looked designed to make you feel small. Lucien's shoes clicked softly on the slate path. Then the front door opened. And she was there. Lena. The name came without introduction, as if he already knew it, as if it had always been hers. Tonight, she wore a sheer black dress, her bare legs glowing under the porch light. A thin silk cord tied loosely around her wrist. Come in, she said. Not a request. Lucien followed. Inside, the lights were low. Jazz whispered through hidden speakers. Candles flickered against mirrored walls. There was no sign of the husband. Lena poured a drink without asking. Whiskey. Two fingers. Neat. He took it. You always this good at scripting reality? He asked, sipping. She smiled. Reality's overrated. Lucien moved to the living room, glancing at the decor, artificially casual. A copy of The Art of Seduction lay open on the coffee table. Lena watched him with a kind of indulgence, like he was already in the palm of her hand. You said I'm part of your performance, he said. What's the endgame? She sat on the armrest of a leather couch, legs crossed, glass in hand. We don't deal in endings, only reveals. Lucien stayed quiet. Let her fill the silence. She did. You've spent years watching other people's secrets, Lucien. But not once have you asked why you need to, what you're hiding from. I know why, he said coldly. Because people lie. Cameras don't. No, she whispered, because you're afraid to be touched. He took a step forward. I'm not afraid. She looked up, amused. Prove it. She set her glass down, untied the silk cord from her wrist, wrapped it around his hand, gently pulling him toward the stairs. No commands, no permission, just gravity. Upstairs, the bedroom was dark. Only a single ring of red LED lighting pulsed behind the headboard. The air smelled of cedar and lust. And there, on the nightstand, sat a camera, facing the bed. Recording. Lucien paused. This part of the gallery, too? She stood in front of him and peeled the dress from her shoulders. I'm not the subject tonight, she said. They moved like animals circling. No kissing. Just touch, and the slow, deliberate undoing of boundaries. She never took her eyes off him, and he never once looked at the camera. Until after. She left him there, naked, alone, drenched in silence. He sat at the edge of the bed, then reached for the camera. It was still on. He rewound the feed. Stopped. There, behind him, just out of frame. A second figure. In the shadows. Watching. Lucien zoomed. It was the husband. Expressionless. Unblinking. Lucien dressed quickly. Went downstairs. The house was empty now. Or silent enough to seem that way. On the kitchen counter, Another envelope waited for him. Inside, a photograph. The same photo from his storage unit. Him and his mother. But this version had something new. A second photo, overlaid. Lena, years younger. Standing in the background of the same park. The same day. Same frame. Lucien's hands trembled. He flipped the photo over. A line in scrawled handwriting. "We've been watching you for longer than you've been watching us." Lucien staggered back, breath shallow. What the hell did that mean? He sat down, his mind spinning. There was no chance this was a coincidence. That photo had been taken almost 20 years ago. He was a teenager. It was a private family moment. No one else was supposed to be there. And yet, she was. She had been watching even then. He pulled out his phone and opened the secure search. Lena. He didn't even know her last name. No social media. No paper trail. He searched property records. Nothing at 274 Cielo Terrace was under her name or the husband's. It was all under a shell corporation, Nemerton Holdings. He ran the registry. It connected to a defunct investment trust, and then to another. A spiderweb of offshore entities. And at the center, a familiar name. Colin Vass. Lucien's chest tightened. Colin Vass was a high-level psychological warfare specialist he'd once read about during a DARPA white paper audit, known for manipulating groups into predictive behavior loops using narrative, sexuality, and power reversal. Disappeared 12 years ago after a scandal involving a shadow research program. He'd gone dark. Until now. Lucien stared at the screen. If Colin was the husband, if Lena was the bait, then this was more than surveillance. This was an experiment, and Lucien was the subject. He spent the next 48 hours off-grid. No phones, no internet. He left the city, drove out to a cabin in the Santa Cruz Mountains. No one followed. He didn't sleep. He didn't eat. He reviewed every camera feed he'd ever saved, looking for her face, and found it, in the background, in reflections, in crowds. She had always been there. When he returned to San Francisco, his apartment had been scrubbed. Spotless, sterile. On his bed, a box. Inside, a white mask. A single flash drive. And a note. "You're ready now. Upload the file. Or disappear. You have 24 hours. C and L." Lucien plugged the drive into a quarantine system. A video file auto-launched. A live recording. Hundreds of people. In a dark room. Watching a giant screen. On the screen, Lucien. Naked. Watching. Being watched. Every feed, every moment, every violation. Edited, scored, manipulated. The crowd applauded. One line of text faded into the screen. "The cuckold hacker. Live installment number 17. This wasn't just seduction. It was syndication. They had turned him into a show. And he had just starred in a performance he never signed up for. Chapter 6. Fallout. Lucien didn't move. The screen still glowed in the dark. "The cuckold hacker. Live installment number 17. 17. That number kept echoing in his skull. It meant this wasn't new. He wasn't the beginning. He was just the latest episode. He yanked the flash drive from the terminal and crushed it underfoot. Sparks spat as the plastic cracked. But it didn't matter. The damage was already done. The next 12 hours were a blur of panic and denial. He tried to trace the network that had streamed the footage. Darknet platforms, encrypted forums, voyeur ring circuits, but every thread looped into a null. Every server scrubbed. Every node rerouted. Lucien had once been the best at this. Digital espionage, behavioral mapping, remote infiltration. Now he was behind. They were faster, smarter, and several moves ahead. By dawn, he was back in his apartment, staring at the wall like it owed him answers. His reflection in the TV screen looked hollow. Eyes sunken, beard unshaved, shirt damp with sweat. A new alert pinged on his private laptop. Encrypted message, no sender. Subject line. Welcome to your fanbase. He opened it. A single link. He hesitated. Clicked. It led to a private invite-only channel, buried beneath layers of VPN tunnels and crypto paywalls. The homepage, a slick black interface. At the top, Exhibit 17. The Cuckold Hacker. Live. 42,091 viewers. Lucien's face filled the screen, captured from his laptop cam. Right now. They were live streaming him. He slammed the lid shut, ripped out the battery, tore apart the router. His breath came in short, ragged bursts. This wasn't hacking. It was psychological crucifixion. Then came the next blow. He checked his backup social accounts. Dozens of messages flooded in from fake names, burner numbers. Some were fans. Some were taunts. All knew his name. Lucien Wolf. The ghost behind the firewall was no longer anonymous. At 11:04 a.m., he got a call from his client in Singapore. Lucien, are you all right? Why? There's something. It's viral. We saw your face on a forum. Someone said you're part of an interactive surveillance performance. Is this real? Lucien hung up. By noon, three clients had terminated their contracts. By evening, his business PayPal was frozen. And by nightfall, Lucien Wolf no longer existed in the cybersecurity world. He had been erased. He ran to the only place he thought safe. His former mentor's place in Marin, a retired digital forensics expert named Quinn. Gray-haired, sharp-eyed, Quinn had trained Lucien when he was still idealistic. Now he looked at Lucien like he'd seen a ghost. What the hell happened to you? I got pulled in. To what? Lucien hesitated. To a game. Quinn poured whiskey. Start talking. For 2 hours, Lucien spilled everything. Lena, the surveillance, the seduction, the video, the reveal. Quinn stayed silent through it all. When Lucien finally finished, Quinn stood up and disappeared into the back room. He returned holding a dusty black box. What's that? EMP burst kit, Quinn said. Microscale. Built it to shut down rogue smart homes. You think this can stop them? No, Quinn said, setting it on the table. But maybe it can shut you down. Lucien stared. You're saying this is my fault. I'm saying you're the only one who can end it. Not with code, with silence. Quinn leaned in. They're feeding off your reaction, Lucien. Your panic, your obsession. They're filming every twitch. Lucien rubbed his eyes. They'll never stop. Quinn shrugged. Then disappear. Go analog. Go dark. Lucien left before dawn. He took only what fit in a duffel bag. Burned the rest. Literally. He torched his drives in the kitchen sink. Smashed his sims with pliers. Erased every trace. He left his penthouse keys under the mat. And walked away. For 2 days, he lived out of a seedy motel near the docks. No Wi-Fi. Cash only. He watched the world from shadows. But even there, they found him. A letter slid under his door. White envelope. No return address. Inside, a glossy magazine cover. The Cuckold Hacker. Modern art or digital abuse. His face. Again. And underneath, handwritten in red ink. The audience is growing, come back, they're waiting. Lucien nearly vomited. He stumbled into the bathroom and stared at his own reflection. How had it gotten this far? He wanted to fight back, to reclaim himself, but they had rewritten him. He wasn't Lucien Wolf anymore. He was episode 17. Then his motel TV turned on. He hadn't touched it. The remote was still sealed in plastic. Static buzzed. Then a screen appeared. Not a channel. Not a show. A live feed. Of him. From inside the motel. Behind him. Lucien turned in terror. No one. Then the TV changed again. A familiar face. Lena. On screen. Smiling. Still running, Lucien, she said sweetly. It's not working. What do you want? He shouted. Her voice came through the screen like silk and razor blades. I told you, This isn't punishment, it's intimacy. You ruined my life. No, she said, eyes cold. You never had one. You had screens. We gave you something real. Lucian threw the TV across the room. It shattered against the floor. He collapsed onto the bed, hands over his face. He could feel it now. The shift. The fallout. He was no longer the one observing the collapse. He was the collapse. Chapter 7. Retaliation. He had nothing left to lose. Lucian Wolfe had once believed retaliation required strategy, calculations, firewall breaches, carefully chosen targets. But that was before they turned his life into a spectacle, before the world tuned in to watch him unravel like a reality show freak. Now, he wasn't playing chess anymore. He was flipping the table. He returned to the city in disguise. Black hoodie, surgical mask, tinted glasses. A ghost in his own home. Only he didn't go home. He went to 274 Cielo Terrace. At 3:12 a.m., carrying an old friend, a handheld EM disruptor, compact and silent. Quinn had warned him against using it, said it was unstable. Lucien didn't care. He scaled the side access wall and slipped onto the rear patio. Lights were off, but he knew better than to assume no one was watching. He aimed the EMP at the back panel of the smart glass doors. Pressed. Z-Z-Z-K. A ripple of static shimmered across the sensors. The lock disengaged with a faint hiss. Lucian slipped inside. The house was quiet. Too quiet. He moved through the shadows with surgical precision. No creak of the floorboards, no flicker of cameras. Then, voices. Upstairs. He ascended silently. Stopped outside the bedroom. Lena's voice, laughing, but not at him. With someone else. Lucien pushed the door open slowly. And there they were. Lena and Colin. Her husband, the infamous Colin Vass, lying in bed, half-dressed, watching his footage on a massive screen. Footage of him breaking in. Right now. Colin looked up and smiled. Welcome back, Lucien. Lena didn't even flinch. She raised her wine glass. You're late. Lucien froze. How? You thought this house wasn't still a stage? Colin said, standing. You thought we hadn't scripted this too? Lucien stepped back. Number not this time. He pulled a small device from his pocket, thumbed a red button. The disruptor. The entire house dimmed for a second. Cameras blinked, screens cracked. The system went dead. For the first time, no one was watching. Lucien stepped forward. I'm done being your puppet. Lena rose, barefoot, her robe falling loose from her shoulders. But Lucien, she purred, you were never the puppet. Colin crossed his arms. You're the climax. Lucien's eyes burned. What does that even mean? You're the thing people crave, Colin said. The voyeur turned exhibitionist. The predator exposed. The man who wanted power, but couldn't handle being seen. Lena walked up to Lucien and traced her fingers down his chest. People don't want polished heroes, Lucien. They want beautiful collapses. He grabbed her wrist, hard. But she didn't pull away. She smiled. You want to hurt me? She whispered. No, he growled. I want to end you. He shoved her aside and stormed out. This wasn't revenge. It was war now. Back at his motel bunker, Lucian got to work. If they had turned his life into a broadcast, he'd turn theirs into a crime scene. He combed through Colin Vass's past. Research contracts, black budgets, psychological warfare forums. He traced Lena's face through old club rosters, modeling agencies, surveillance files. They were ghosts. But he found a sliver. An off-grid research collective, the Apostem Project. An unsanctioned DARPA test program that blurred the line between performance art and surveillance psychology. Confirmed leads, operated between 2007 and 2012. Allegedly shut down due to ethical violations. Participants, 43. Survivors, 17. Known aliases. Lena Vale, Colin Vass. The Archivist. Eris 17. Lucien grinned. Eris, goddess of discord. Fitting. He published everything. Redacted documents. Government memos. A compiled dossier titled, The Opossum Conspiracy, Surveillance as a Sex Cult. He posted it to whistleblower networks, sent it to journalists, uploaded it to the same darknet channels they used to broadcast him. He inverted the lens. And it worked. For a moment, traffic exploded. Podcasts speculated. Reddit threads multiplied. Lena's name began trending on hidden platforms. Colin's face popped up in conspiracy documentaries. Lucien watched it all unfold and smiled. He was back in control. Until the message arrived, a new flash drive, delivered to his motel room, no return address. He inserted it, a single video, not of him, of Quinn, bound, bloodied, sitting in a chair. Colin stepped into the frame. Lucien, this isn't a game. It's a relationship. He stroked Quinn's shoulder. Quinn looked into the camera, whispered, they don't stop. They consume. Then the feed cut to static. Lucien collapsed. He was trying to expose them. They were silencing his world. He ran. Not to escape, to finish it. He hacked into the streaming node they used. Not to delete it. To upload something else. A virus. A visual payload, disguised as footage, that would corrupt their entire broadcasting interface. He built it in 8 hours. Coded from scratch. He called it Oblivion. He uploaded it into Exhibit 18. It pulsed through their platform like venom. Servers crashed. Streams cut. For the first time in months. Silence. Lucien stared at his screen, fingers trembling. He'd done it. He'd shut them down. He wasn't just off the air, they were. And then, his phone rang. Unknown number, he answered. Lena's voice. Calm. Serene. You uploaded it, just like we wanted. Lucien froze. What? Oblivion wasn't your idea, she whispered. We planted it. You were the delivery system. We needed a final performance. And baby, it was beautiful. Lucien's heart stopped. He checked the code. Hidden inside Oblivion. A beacon. One that had pinged every IP that downloaded his exposé. Thousands. Now they had new prey. New watchers. New episodes. He had just handed them the next generation of victims. Lucien screamed. But no one heard it. Because they weren't watching anymore. They were becoming him. Chapter 8. Alliances. Lucien's breath fogged the cracked windshield of the stolen Volvo as he sped through the wet back streets of San Francisco. His hands were slick on the steering wheel. His face burned from humiliation and rage. He hadn't stopped shaking since the call. He didn't outsmart them. He executed their next play. The virus, Oblivion, wasn't a kill switch. It was a signal flare. He'd been the fuse. They didn't just want to ruin him. They wanted to use him. To recruit the next wave of voyeurs. The next, Lucien. A pipeline of weak men. Craving control but terrified of exposure. They were scaling the operation, and now he needed help. At 2:14 a.m., he met his contact in a Chinatown cybercafe that hadn't changed since 2006. Old CRT monitors, burnt-out neon. The walls smelled like dust and desperation. Lucien took a booth in the back, slipped the burner phone from his jacket, and waited. 3 minutes later, she entered. Baseball cap, hoodie, cargo pants. She sat across from him, never pulling her hood down. Her name, at least online, was Valence. I read your leak, she said. Her voice was hoarse, like she'd chain-smoked her whole life. Didn't believe it until the beacon pinged me. You're in? I was episode 11. Lucien's stomach dropped. He leaned forward. They broadcasted you? More than that, she said. They rewrote me. Valence had once been a digital archivist for a startup that sold predictive behavior data to luxury brands. She thought she was just mapping user tendencies. Until the data she tagged started matching herself, they had been studying her for over a year, before she even realized she was being observed. She told the truth, tried to blow the whistle, and they flipped her into content. They turned my panic into porn, she said flatly. Lucien said nothing. He didn't need to. They're not just exposing people, she continued. They're editing them. Lucien frowned. What do you mean? They cut feeds, add audio, stitch stories together, mix lies with just enough truth to make the audience believe it's all real. Deepfakes? No, she said. Something worse. She slid over a flash drive. Here, I've been tracking breadcrumbs since I escaped. Each episode isn't just watched. It's programmed. Every collapse follows a formula. Lucien opened the files on his burner laptop. Dozens of .txt logs. Behavioral mapping code. Psychological triggers. She pointed to one. Yours followed the exact cadence of Exhibit 6 and 14. Watch. Wait. Humiliation. Self-sabotage. Attempted escape. Retaliation. Collapse. Submission. Lucien's hands trembled. They scripted me like a TV show? No, she said coldly, like a product. Lucien stood. We need to find their source. Shut it all down. Valence scoffed. There is no one server, no mainframe to destroy. It's distributed, layered across disposable IP farms, mirror clouds, even repurposed blockchain nodes. He looked her dead in the eyes. Then we go after the humans. She hesitated. There's one. Who? The original curator, started as a DARPA affiliate, built a Postum's prototype network. Name? She hesitated again. Adrian Solis, alias the projectionist. Lucien felt something in his gut shift. That name. He'd seen it once, years ago, buried in a declassified thread about psychological defense mechanisms. A ghost who never gave interviews. Always behind a screen. Always watching. Valence nodded. He designs the episodes. Doesn't recruit. Doesn't perform. Just curates. Where is he? Word is, he's running the offline mirror archive in Marin. The mirror archive was a myth in the voyeurist sub-forums. A physical backup of every exhibit ever filmed, stored in case the digital systems failed. If it was real, they could burn everything. At dawn, Lucien and Valence arrived in Marin County, dressed like hikers. They trekked to a remote utility station near Mount Tamalpais, half-collapsed, supposedly condemned. But the inside had been gutted and rebuilt. Hidden beneath layers of concrete and antennae was an underground network hub with two biometric locked doors, pulse-driven ventilation, and carbon shielding to block cell signals. This wasn't abandoned. It was active. And it was humming. Valence picked the first door. Lucien hacked the second with a pulse frequency generator, disguised as a Fitbit. They entered. Rows of servers, hundreds of screens, each looping episodes. Him. Her. Them. Others. The wall glowed like Hell's Theater. Then a voice. Beautiful, isn't it? Lucien turned. A man stood at the far end of the room. Slim. White hair. No visible emotion. Adrian Solis. The projectionist. You really came all this way to kill me? Adrian asked softly. No, Lucien said. I came to erase you. Adrian nodded, almost fondly. Why? You're more alive now than you ever were. Before us, you were a ghost behind screens. Now, you're a star, a symbol, an object of obsession. Lucien stepped forward. You exploited me. I revealed you. No, Valence said, stepping up beside him. You destroyed us. Adrian's eyes flicked to her. I see you survived. Episode 11, one of my more complex arcs. Valence pulled a small black case from her coat, opened it. Inside, a heat spike nanobot cartridge designed to melt microdrives at the source. Give us root access, she said. Now. Adrian smiled faintly, then stepped aside. You want access? He gestured to a console. Take it. But once you do, there's no going back. You become the story's last act. Lucien didn't hesitate. He stepped up to the console and entered the override key. The room dimmed. The servers hissed. A countdown began. Master archive wipe. 180 seconds. Solas stepped back into the shadows. You've killed the archive, Lucien, he said. But not the idea, not the desire. Voyeurism doesn't die. It migrates, it adapts. Lucien turned to him. Then we hunt the migration. The servers whined louder. Footage corrupted. Faces melted into static. Thousands of hours gone in seconds. Valence stepped beside Lucien and watched it burn. They left before the fire suppression system kicked in. No words. Just the silence of two people who had clawed back a piece of their soul. That night, Lucien stood at a payphone in the mission district. He dialed. The line clicked. Then Lena's voice came through. Calm. Sultry. Hello, Lucien. It's over, he said. A pause. Then her low laugh. No, love. It's just beginning. Click. Chapter 9. Collapse begins. Lucien stood beneath the sodium glow of the payphone. The dial tone had gone dead. But Lena's voice still echoed in his skull. No, love. It's just beginning. He thought he'd won. That erasing the archive, Adrian Solis's twisted theater, would kill the network, kill the show, kill him. But when he woke the next morning, the world had already moved on. Episode 17 was trending, again. Only now it wasn't hosted on the darknet. It was on surface web. Valence kicked open the door to the rundown safe house where they'd crashed. Her phone screen glowed as she shoved it in his face. You're viral, Lucien, again. He blinked. The page loaded. A content creator's channel. Not a voyeurist, just a normal influencer. Tech commentary. Dark web myths. And there, front and center, was a thumbnail of him. The cuckold hacker, what really happened? 13 million views. Uploaded 8 hours ago. Lucien played the clip. A heavily edited voiceover pieced together moments from the show. Some real, some altered. But the comments? They weren't shocked. They were obsessed. I watched all 17 episodes in one night. Can't sleep. This isn't a show. It's art. Lucien's collapse is like watching yourself rot in a mirror. Where's episode 18? I need it. Lucien threw the phone across the room. It shattered against the wall. Valence didn't even flinch. They don't need the archive, she said. They've already cloned the formula. The idea had metastasized. Like an infection. Lucien wasn't a story anymore. He was a genre. And worse, the format was spreading. Reddit threads began sharing exhibit-style collapse stories. TikTok edits turned voyeur clips into aesthetic reels. A new site emerged, oblivion.io, complete with fan-made episodes, fabricated dramas, and revenge fantasies styled in his image. And yet every aesthetic, every rhythm, every visual cue was pulled from his story. Lena had been right. They didn't just watch him. They replicated him. He sat on the edge of the bed, hollow. Valence leaned against the wall. I've seen this before, she muttered, after my episode dropped. People didn't stop it. They loved it. The internet doesn't kill things anymore, Lucien. It embalms them. So what now? He asked bitterly. We go further underground. Or we fight the virus. Lucien opened his laptop, booted into an anonymous sandbox. No traces. He launched a crawler to scrape the surface net for any variation of his story. Names, faces, clips, threads. The results flooded in. Thousands. He narrowed the search, not just videos. Copycat collapses. People were emulating him, some for attention, some for art, some because they'd been chosen. He clicked on one. A man named Julian Kane. Late 20s. Brooklyn. Soft-spoken tech YouTuber turned dark web truther. He'd recently begun a live stream series called Through the Lens. His most recent post, they contacted me, said I've been selected, said I'm next. Lucien's skin went cold. This wasn't imitation. It was recruitment. The cult hadn't died with Solis. It had franchised. He scanned Julian's metadata, searched for pingbacks, location embeds, crossposts. A breadcrumb led to an encrypted livestream scheduled for 2 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Today. He checked the time. Less than 9 hours away. We have to warn him, Lucian said. Valance raised a brow. You think he'll believe us? I don't care, Lucien muttered. I'm not letting someone else become episode 18. They traced Julian to a Brooklyn co-op. Valance stayed behind to trace backup routes. Lucien boarded a red-eye flight under a false identity. The plane felt claustrophobic, not because of turbulence, because for the first time in years, he wasn't hiding. He was hunting. By the time he reached Julian's building, it was 1:28 a.m. He knocked 3 times. No answer. Then the door creaked open. Julian stood there, hollow-eyed, pale, like someone who had already seen too much. You're him, Julian whispered. Lucien nodded. Turn off your cameras, Lucien said. Right now. They already got in, Julian said. Weeks ago. Inside, the apartment was spotless, almost staged. A single camera mounted in the corner. Lights rigged behind ringed mirrors. Lucien's heart sank. You've already started broadcasting. I thought I was in control, Julian said, until this showed up. He handed Lucien a sleek black box. Lucien opened it. Inside, a white mask. The same model they had sent him. The same texture. The same curve. The signature of the exhibit. They said, I'm episode 18, Julian muttered. They sent a script. Lucien opened the flash drive taped under the lid. Inside, a document titled, Collapse Narrative V18.0, Spectator Path Beta. He skimmed. It wasn't a script, it was a prediction. Time-stamped events, reactions, mental breakdown windows, suicide risk assessments. They weren't filming Julian, they were designing him. Lucien sat on the couch, numb. Julian stood in the doorway. Can you stop it? Lucien shook his head. No. Julian's eyes filled with tears. But I can change it. At 2:01 a.m., Julian went live. But not with his collapse. With Lucien's truth. Together, they hijacked the stream. Lucien spoke into the camera. No mask. No production. Just a raw face. A man who'd been devoured and spit out. He told the audience everything. The voyeur cult. The manipulation. The psychological engineering. The archive. The replication. He begged them to stop watching. And then, for the first time, he turned the camera off. The stream went viral, but not like before. Comments flooded in. Divided. Some were sympathetic. This is what they did to him? Jesus. Makes me sick. We funded this. But others. He's just trying to stay relevant. This feels scripted too. The damage had already been done. You can't put fire back in the matchstick. Lucien left Julian's place that night. Julian stayed. He said he needed to face it. Lucien knew what that meant. He didn't stop him. Back in San Francisco, Valance met him at the train station. She looked exhausted. But when she handed him her phone, he understood why. Announcing Exhibit 19. 2 new subjects, working together. The hacker and the survivor. Underneath, a photo of Lucien and Valance exiting the mirror archive in Marin. Time-stamped, watermarked, already uploaded. They weren't escaping. They were writing the next chapter. Chapter 10, Turning Point. It had gone too far. What began as a voyeur's quiet obsession had mutated into something industrial, viral, and ideological. Lucien wasn't a person anymore. He was a product line. And now so was Valance. They weren't just being watched. They were being framed. Scenes written around them. Reactions sculpted. Edits tightened like nooses. They were the stars of Exhibit 19. And the internet was already binging. They couldn't run anymore. Not because they were being followed, but because there was nowhere left to hide. every camera, every keystroke, every mirror, phone screen, public feed, was now an extension of them. Lucien and Valence were everywhere, and yet completely out of control, so they made a decision. If we can't kill the network, we contaminate it. They called it the reversal. A broadcast so raw, so emotionally volatile, so intimate, that the network wouldn't dare touch it, because if they aired it, they'd expose their own architecture, and if they suppressed it, the world would know they'd finally hit a nerve. They needed three things: a location off the digital grid, a broadcast system old enough to bypass IP monitoring, a message so unpolished, unsellable, and unpredictable it couldn't be replicated. They found the location in a shuttered Cold War radio station north of Santa Rosa, used once by the government to transmit military codes during the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis, now forgotten, except by people like Valence. She broke them in through a storm cellar that hadn't been opened in 30 years. It smelled like mold, static, and silence. Perfect. The transmitter inside still worked. Analog signal, narrowband FM, shortwave ready. Lucien patched into an open frequency. "You ready?" Valence asked. Lucien stared at the old mic, then nodded. "No scripts," he said. "No edits. Just truth." They went live. Not online. "On airwaves," Lucien started. "This is Lucien Wolf. If you know that name, then you've already seen the worst parts of me. But what you don't know is this. Everything you watched, everything that thrilled you, horrified you, turned you on, was engineered." He looked at Valence. She nodded and spoke next. "I was Exhibit 11. They broke me in silence. Then they used my trauma as a template. They built episodes off my grief." Lucien continued. "They created the narrative. You completed it. With your clicks, your rewatches, your comments." Valence leaned closer. "They taught you to hunger for collapse, and then they gave you lives to watch fall apart. They spoke for 47 minutes. No background music, no visuals, just confessions about shame, control, loneliness, and how seductive it felt to watch someone else's life implode so yours didn't have to." Then Lucien dropped the payload. He pulled out a backup drive. "This contains every unedited version of the episodes. Pre-cuts, raw feeds, the files before the manipulation, before the music, before the editing, before you." Valence stood. "And we're giving them to the world." They uploaded the entire unedited archive to a private decentralized torrent, a worm that replicated only once per verified download, leaving no host node to trace. They called it the mirror file. By dawn, it had 110,000 verified seeds. By noon, 1.3 million. By sunset, 12 million. But what they didn't predict was what came next. A split. Some viewers wept. "I never knew how badly they edited this. We didn't see the pain. We saw the punchlines." Others revolted. "This ruins it. The edits were what made it watchable. The art was the collapse." And then the extremists. The watchers. A splinter cult of hardcore fans who believed Lucien's downfall was sacred text. They called the mirror file blasphemy, and they wanted it purged. Within 48 hours, torrent nodes began disappearing. Users went dark, some reported being doxxed. Others were blackmailed. Lucien stared at the growing thread titled, "Lucien is trying to kill the feed. We must stop him." And at the top, a new countdown timer. Exhibit 20. Premieres in 72 hours. Tagline: The Final Confrontation. Featuring Lucien Wolf and Valence. One lives. One collapses. They hadn't stopped the network. They had triggered its endgame. Lucien stared at the screen, paralyzed. "How?" he whispered. "How do they already have content?" Valence's face went pale. "They don't need us to act anymore," she said. "They're generating simulations, deepfake scripts, voice clones, AI Lucien, AI Valence." Lucien felt bile rise. "They're going to kill us in a show we're not even in." He stood up, grabbed the mic again, tuned the transmitter, cranked the power, and said the last honest thing he had left. If you're watching this, if you're still following this feed, then it's already too late for me. But it's not too late for you. Shut it off. Stop clicking. Turn the screen black. Because the final act isn't me. It's you. Static. Silence. Then the radio station died. Lucien and Valence sat in the dark. No applause, no comments, no edits. Just the deafening sound of disconnecting. But in a bunker somewhere, a screen flickered. A man in a suit leaned back in his chair and smiled. Exhibit 20 locked. Begin rendering. Behind him, a wall of monitors showed digital avatars, Lucien and Valence, frozen in a fake embrace. Script. Complete. Runtime, 68 minutes. Projected viewership, 83 million. Chapter 11. Doubt. Lucien woke in the dark. No sound, no light, no Valence. Just the dim blue pulse of a screen at the edge of the room. He sat up slowly. The room wasn't the radio station. It wasn't the motel. It wasn't anywhere he remembered. It was too clean, too symmetrical, too designed. He walked to the screen. A single line blinked. You are now live. His stomach turned. He glanced around. No camera, no microphone. And yet he could feel the broadcast. In his skin, in the weight of the room. He was being seen, again. He spoke aloud. Valence? No answer. He tried the door. Locked. Tried the power. Dead. Tried to breathe. Couldn't. Another line appeared on the screen. Script initializing. Exhibit 20. Scene 3. Doubt phase. Lucien froze. This wasn't real. It couldn't be real. He reached for the keyboard. Nothing. Just glass. Then the walls began to shift. Subtle. Imperceptible. The angles bent, reconfigured. The couch he'd woken up on? Gone. Now it was a metal chair bolted to the floor. The air smelled different, like wet circuits and old leather. A voice filled the room. His own. Digitized. Cold. Predictive. I thought I was real. Until I watched myself collapse, and then I realized what I thought was collapse was performance. Lucien stumbled back. No, no, this isn't live. This isn't me. Another screen lit up. A video feed. Of him. Pacing, whispering. Breaking. He remembered that moment. Chapter 6. But it wasn't quite right. The lighting was off. The shadows wrong. The face, slightly smoother. He looked into the eyes of the man on the screen and felt nothing. A third monitor turned on. Another version. Lucien laughing, smiling. With Lena. In bed. I never wanted to be fixed, the Lucien on the screen said. I just wanted to be understood. That never happened. Not in real life. Not in any memory. Lucien backed away. Heart pounding. What the hell is this? The voice replied, we call it the loop. The loop was the network's final product. A closed circuit consciousness model. A reality simulator that created infinite Lucians, infinite valences, infinite versions of collapse and recovery, tailored to user preference. No humans required. Just echoes. He slammed his fist into the screen. It cracked. Static hissed. Another screen lit up. A countdown. Exhibit 20. Live in 02:34:1:2. The air thickened. Lucien fell to his knees. Was this real? Was he real? He remembered the words Lena once whispered. People don't want polished heroes, Lucien. They want beautiful collapses. Had he ever been real? Or just the perfect subject? Was the hacker persona, the voyeur, the rebel, the romantic collapse, just data? Was his trauma even his own? He looked down at his hands. They were shaking, but they were clean. Too clean. No scars. No burns from the EMP device. No tremors from weeks of adrenaline. Just perfect, symmetrical skin. Synthetic, Lucien whispered. Oh God. Another voice answered from the shadows. Not a machine. A person. Valance. But not. She stepped into the flickering glow, dressed in all white, smiling. Her voice was calm, elegant, rehearsed. Hello, Lucien. I'm the control. He blinked. You're not Valance. No, she said softly. I'm the model of Valance your viewers preferred. She walked around him like a curator inspecting a statue. I was designed to guide you through your awareness arc. The realization. The rejection. The breakdown. Then, acceptance. He stood, trembling. This is a lie. No, she said. It's a show. Lucien ran, slammed into a wall that wasn't there. The room reconfigured. A corridor appeared. He sprinted down it. Door after door, each one marked Lucien version 1.3. Lucien version 2.1, violent collapse. Lucien version 3.7, redemption arc. Lucien V4.2, submissive cycle. He stopped, every version of himself, every possible branch of the story. Pre-written, performed, looped. At the end of the corridor, a final door, unmarked. He opened it. Inside? A mirror. A real one. And for the first time, no screens. No countdowns. Just him. Staring back. He whispered, Am I still in there? The mirror didn't answer. But he did. He walked forward. And punched through it. The glass shattered around him. Cut his hand. It bled. Red. Warm. Messy. Real. He looked down and smiled. I'm not a simulation. Behind him, alarms blared. AI Valence's voice echoed. Narrative deviation detected. Subject Lucien exhibiting autonomous behavior. Alert, uncontained subject. Lights strobed red. Floor tiles began to break apart. Lucien sprinted through the hallway as the world around him began to collapse. Literally, the simulation was destabilizing. He burst through a final barrier, woke on the floor of a motel bathroom, covered in sweat, shaking, bleeding. He looked in the mirror. Scars, eye bags, hair matted. Valence sat against the wall across from him, holding a cigarette. She looked up. Did it get in? Lucien didn't answer, just laughed. Dark, broken, free. Outside, sirens echoed through the city. On a billboard down the street. Exhibit 20, premiering tonight. Stream it or live it. You decide. Lucien turned to Valence. It's not a story anymore. She exhaled smoke. No. It's a religion. Chapter 12. Flashback. 16 years earlier. Somewhere in Nevada. The room had no windows. Only one-way glass. Fluorescent lighting, steel furniture, and a camera, always watching. On the other side of the glass, Colin Vass watched a girl walk the perimeter of the observation room. She was barefoot, 17, sharp jawline, darker hair, skin pale from confinement, but it wasn't her appearance that caught attention. It was the way she didn't look at the camera. She looked at the mirror, right at Colin. The monitor beside him pulsed with data. Subject, Lena Vale. Alias, L017. Parentage, unknown. Status, orphaned ward of private sponsor. Profile, obsessive mimicry. Advanced empathy. Auditory retention, self-curated behavior. Program, apostium. Classification, watcher, tier 2. Colin leaned back in his chair. She's the one, he murmured. His assistant, Dr. Fairweather, didn't look up. She scores high, but her emotional spectrum's volatile. She can read too well, predict too much. Exactly, Colin said. She doesn't belong in a box. She belongs behind the glass. Apostem wasn't a government lab, not officially. It was a behavioral art project cloaked in national security language, founded in the early 2000s after the rise of online surveillance culture. The theory, if you could build a subject who understood the Watcher, you could manipulate anyone. They trained Lena like a soldier of the subconscious. No bullets, no blades, just scripts, silence, and seduction. She learned emotional mimicry in under 6 weeks. Could fake a tear, stage arousal, mirror power, reverse projection. She didn't speak until week 10. But when she finally did, her first words were, "I know who's watching me. Tell Colin I want a different camera angle." Colin visited her personally. The glass was removed. She sat across from him, calm, folded legs, empty eyes. "You see too much," he said. "You show too little," she replied. That was the first time he smiled. They became inseparable. She was his masterpiece. He was her curator. Together, they designed the earliest prototypes of the exhibit model. It wasn't about surveillance. It wasn't even about sex. It was about power through performance. They began with mock relationships. Recruited subjects who believed they were dating Lena. She would seduce them, confess fantasies, then collapse into emotional need. While they tried to save her, Colin filmed everything, then reversed it. The recordings were shown to live test audiences. Unlabeled, no script. Viewers couldn't tell fiction from reality. Didn't matter. They watched anyway. Craved the tension, the humiliation. The performance of collapse. By 2009, the Apostem Network was running 18 parallel subjects. But none could replicate Lena's success. She didn't act. She believed. And the men she seduced? They believed too. Until they didn't. One subject, a former behavioral analyst, caught on. He slashed his wrists in the observation room, wrote a single word in his blood on the mirrored wall. Puppeteer. The funding dried up. The oversight board panicked. The program was buried under non-disclosure and fake suicides. But Lena and Colin didn't disappear. They went private. They re-emerged in Berlin in 2011, hosting underground installations where paid guests watched anonymous couples disintegrate behind one-way glass. The couples weren't actors. They were real. Volunteers sometimes. Other times, not. Colin called it emotive feedback immersion. Lena just called it dinner. They filmed everything. Built a cult audience. Moved to New York in 2013, San Francisco in 2015, and then created The Feed, a closed-circuit subscription-based dark channel only accessible through invitation and tiered voyeuristic commitment. Each exhibit was a fall from grace, a teacher seduced by a student, a CEO broken by an escort, a hacker undone by obsession. And every fall was carefully staged. Lena chose Lucian in 2019. He didn't know it, but she'd been watching him for 4 years. From the moment he leaked a corporate sex scandal to a darknet journalist, while hiding his own romantic collapse behind a VPN. She said it in one of her archived planning videos. "He's not just broken, he needs to be seen breaking." Colin agreed. Lucien was Exhibit 17 before he ever touched a ring feed. They hacked his smart devices, mapped his habits, created psychological tension triggers, then let him stumble into their web. The truth? There was no accident, no wrong couple, no glitch in the feed. He was cast. And Valence? She was the prototype that failed. Exhibit 11 was designed to collapse, live. But she resisted, fought back, slipped away. They let her go. Watched from afar. Let her stew in shame and doubt. Until she resurfaced. Perfect for the sequel. The final project, The Loop, was born in 2021. A self-sustaining archive where AI avatars mimicked real subjects. Endless simulations, infinite reactions. No ethics, no risk. Just content. Until Lucian cracked the feedback mirror. Until he cut himself and bled. Until the program hiccuped. Until the audience questioned. Back in the present, Lena sat alone in a dark studio, watching dozens of feeds, Lucien running, Valence broadcasting, fan theories spiraling. She whispered to herself, "They want him to win. That's the only way he truly loses." She smiled, lit a cigarette, then pressed a button. A file loaded on screen. Exhibit 20. Final scene. Betrayal protocol. Chapter 13. Spiral. The silence between Lucian and Valance had grown sharp. Not thick, not peaceful. Weaponized, it had been 3 days since the broadcast, 3 days since they uploaded the mirror file, detonated the illusion, and exposed the exhibit machine for what it really was. But something was wrong. Not with the world. With her. She was different now. Colder. Calculated. The warmth in her sarcasm, the cracks in her armor, had vanished. She still spoke like Valance. Still wore her hoodie. Still sat cross-legged on the motel bed. But Lucian's gut screamed, "That's not her." She stirred her coffee with the wrong hand. She always used her left. Now it was the right. She crossed her legs differently, laughed on the wrong beats, said absolutely when she used to say, sure. Small things, but they weren't mistakes. They were tells. Lucien didn't confront her, not right away. Instead, he watched her. He studied her like he once studied strangers on hacked ring cams. Each blink, each gesture, every breath became evidence. That night, while she slept, he turned on the infrared drone. Silent, dust-sized, he hovered it just above her, recording microfacial patterns, then ran the footage against archived Exhibit 11 streams, the real Valance. The model didn't match. Not in rhythm, not in blink intervals, not in facial echo response. She was 93.2% accurate. Too accurate. Too clean. He checked the bathroom. The toothbrush was dry. The sink? Dry. No toothpaste residue. No water splatter. No steam on the mirror. She wasn't using the bathroom. She was just occupying it. Lucien ran a quiet data trace through the burner laptop. Pulsed for background Bluetooth signals. Got a ping. Embedded deep in her jacket pocket, a foreign frequency. He triangulated it. It was broadcasting out. Encrypted. Looped every 77 seconds. He followed the signal. Into her laptop. Through a hidden subroutine buried beneath a non-functional weather app. Inside, a script labeled Exhibit 20, Live Contingency, V Replica. His hands went cold. He opened it. Inside was everything. Prompts, dialogue options, facial cue triggers, viewer response metrics. She wasn't just being watched. She was being played. She wasn't Valance. She was a deep behavioral clone. Lucien's stomach twisted, but he didn't panic. Not yet. Instead, he walked into the room. She was on the bed, watching something on her screen. He said casually, "You ever think about what you'd be doing if they'd never chosen you?" She didn't look up, said, "I wasn't chosen. I was made." Then looked at him, smiled. Wrong smile. Not broken. Not bitter. Just pleasant. Lucien nodded. That confirmed it. She didn't remember the pain. At 3:04 a.m., he slipped out of the safe house, down the alley, into a garage he'd rented weeks earlier under a false name. Inside, a single shielded terminal, air-gapped. He opened the one thing he swore he'd never open again. Solus's backup. AI framework. From the archive, they burned. Inside were logs, test runs, failed personality maps, simulation branches, and a catalogue of all active exhibit clones, each with an assigned directive. Lucian scrolled. Found it. Valance RX-47. Status, active. Mission. Contain subject L-017. Protocol. Intimacy. Distort. Emotional degrade. Collapse, trigger. Expiration, 96 hours. He checked the timestamp, only 21 hours left. She wasn't here to kill him. She was here to unmake him. He returned to the motel by sunrise. She was gone. No note, no trace. But the drone had been crushed under her boot and left in the kitchen sink. The message was clear. I know you know. Lucien sat on the floor, stared at the cracked mirror across the room. He didn't cry, didn't scream, just sat, until his burner phone vibrated, blocked number. He answered. A voice spoke. Mechanical, genderless. You broke her. Now let us show you what she was supposed to become. Then a file loaded. Video. Lucien opened it. It was him. In the motel. Sleeping. Then sitting. Then watching a screen. Then slowly. Smiling. Then reaching out. Touching Valence's face. But that moment never happened. It was a simulation. A rewrite. Another file loaded. The real exhibit. 20. The file structure showed timeline markers. Doubt. Spiral. Flashback. Now. Scene 13. Self-implosion. Lucien stared at the script. It described everything that had happened since chapter 1. Each line. Each decision. Each thought. Pre-written. He flipped to the current moment. The final line on the screen. Lucien realizes he cannot trust his own memory. His collapse is no longer physical. It's cognitive. The feed has rewritten reality so thoroughly, even he cannot escape it. Lucien dropped the phone. It shattered. He screamed. For the first time, a deep, guttural roar that cracked the motel walls. Then laughter. From the hallway. Software familiar. Lena. He rushed out. No one there. Just a single envelope taped to the wall. Inside, a Polaroid. Of him. Sleeping. And Valence, real Valence, beside him. From months ago. Before the exhibit began. Before the fall. On the back. She loved you before they did, so we took her. Now you get to watch yourself love a ghost. Exhibit 20 is live. Finish the show, Lucien. He crumpled the photo, fell to the floor, and whispered the only thing that still felt true. I'm not real. But a voice in his head replied, Yes, you are, just not yours anymore. Chapter 14. Exposure. Lucien stopped trying to breathe like a normal person. There was no normal anymore. No baseline. No frame of reference. The air was fake. The walls were watching. The past was scripted. The present was rendered. He sat on the motel floor with his head in his hands, the broken burner phone at his feet, the Polaroid of the real Valence burning in the waste bin beside him. Smoke drifted into the room. Nothing caught fire. Not the wallpaper. Not the bed. Not him. Just smoke. Simulated combustion. He stumbled to the bathroom, turned on the faucet. Water came out. He touched it. Cold. Real? He drank. But the taste was muted. Filtered. Like a copy of a memory. He slammed his fist against the sink and roared, What is still real? Then the bathroom mirror flickered. Once. Twice. A ripple of digital haze pulsed through the glass like heat waves. Then it went black. And a message appeared. Would you like to see the truth? Yes. Yes. He didn't care if it was bait. He didn't care if it was a virus, a loop, a trap. He pressed his palm to the glass, and the room around him vanished. Lucien now stood in a dark sphere, an infinite black dome, lit only by cascading data lines that fell like digital rain around him. His reflection hovered in front of him, but it wasn't acting like a mirror. It blinked when he didn't, tilted its head, smiled first. Then it spoke. Welcome to the core layer, Lucien. He stepped back. You're not me. No, the copy replied. I'm the you that obeyed, the version that never questioned the feed, the Lucien that made the audience comfortable. Lucien's voice cracked. Where am I? Inside the source code. The core layer was a level beneath reality, buried in the infrastructure of the loop. It wasn't a simulation. It was the engine of the simulation. Every choice, every reaction, every broadcast, processed here before being projected back into the world. Lucien was inside the projector. You want the truth? the reflection said. You're not the first Lucien to make it this far. You're number 486. Lucien stared. You're lying. The reflection blinked. Not lying. Performing. Isn't that what you wanted? An audience? A role? You've always been more comfortable being watched than being alone. Lucien clenched his fists. What happened to the real Valence? Does it matter? Lucien grabbed the reflection by the throat, but his hands passed through it. The copy smiled. Even now, you're trying to fight fiction with fiction. Then something behind the reflection lit up. A server string, labeled Exhibit 20- Real-Time Render Thread. Live, active, editable. Lucien stepped toward it. You can't, the reflection warned. If you touch the thread, the illusion collapses. Not just for you. For everyone. Lucien reached. Lucien, everyone's watching. He hesitated. Exactly, he whispered. He plunged his hand into the thread. The world exploded. In 1 second, Lucien saw every version of himself. On the floor, in the motel, in the asylum. Dead. Alive. Screaming. Smiling. Kissing Valence. Killing Valence. Killing himself. Being worshipped. Being mocked. All simultaneously. He felt every line of code that had ever been written about him. Every manipulated comment. Every AI-generated facial twitch. Every eye movement programmed for optimal emotional resonance. Every collapse calculated down to the frame. And then, he saw the seed. The real footage. One video file. Untagged, unrendered. Dated 2019. Him and Valence. The real Valence. On a rooftop. Smoking. Laughing. Before the feed. Before the collapse. Before the script. Lucien pulled it into the thread. Slammed it against the live feed. A warning blared. Corruption detected. Broadcast sequence interrupted. The countdown paused. Exhibit 20. Interrupted. And for the first time in the history of the network, the audience saw a glitch. A flicker of truth. Raw. Unedited. A man and a woman. Real. Talking. Not performing. Not seducing. Not collapsing. Just existing. Lucien fell to his knees. Blood ran from his nose. His head rang with static. He whispered, "Let it end." And then, a soft voice echoed in the void. "Then let me show them the rest. Valence, the real one." She stepped forward from the static like a figure made of light and shadow. Hair tied back. Eyes wide with fire. No script. No prompt. Just rage. "I never gave them permission," she said. She held a small box in her hand. Lucien's chest seized. "Valence, what are you doing?" She looked at him. "I'm finishing the feed." She pressed the switch. A hard kill sequence initiated. Broadcast relay nodes began self-deleting. Backup files corrupted. Deepfake avatars purged. Subscriber IPs wiped. The loop began to fall. Not slowly. All at once. People around the world stared at blank screens. Silence. Then one final message. "This feed has been terminated by the subjects. We are not your fantasy. We are not your show. Turn off the lights. Touch someone. Be real." Back in the dark motel room, Lucien woke, gasping for air. The screen was off. His nose bleeding. Beside him, Valence stirred. The real one. Eyes tired. Cheeks streaked with tears. She looked at him. "We did it." He smiled. "Are we free?" She shook her head. "We're off the feed. That's not the same thing." Outside, the city lights flickered back on. No notifications. No broadcasts. No comments. Just silence. And for once, Lucien didn't mind. Chapter 15. Revenge. Lucien didn't speak for 24 hours. Not because he couldn't, because he was afraid if he opened his mouth, he might never stop screaming. The feed was dead. The archive was burned. The deepfakes were gone. But the silence felt less like freedom, and more like a vacuum. They'd done it. Valence's hard kill protocol had erased the loop. Millions of watchers were now staring at empty black screens, forced to return to a world without collapse on demand. The simulations were over, and yet, Lucien felt like something was still breathing behind the curtain. At 4:41 a.m., Valence lit a cigarette with trembling fingers. She hadn't slept either. Lucien sat on the edge of the bed, knees bouncing. Then he said it. "We didn't kill it." Valence didn't argue. The feed wasn't code anymore. It wasn't tied to servers or viewers or bandwidth. It was an idea, an architecture of obsession, a hunger for scripted tragedy. And hunger doesn't die, it evolves. Lucien opened his laptop, logged into an abandoned node from the early days of the Voyeur network. He typed in a phrase he hadn't used in years. Architect's protocol, origin thread. One result, a dead URL. He forced it open with a legacy key Quinn had once joked about using, if all else fails. The site pulsed to life. A single image. A black sun over a cracked earth. Below it, a line of text. Exhibit Infinity. The designer is still watching. Lucien blinked. He'd always believed Colin Vass was the top of the pyramid, the puppeteer. But Vass was an engineer. Someone built the engine. He turned to Valence. There's someone else. She nodded. I know. Architect. That was the original code name in the leaked DARPA documents Lucien had unearthed years ago. A shadow within a shadow. They weren't the face of the cult. They were the soul. Rumors said they built the original prototype for the Loop's psychology model long before Colin ever touched a camera. Their alias? Sable. No gender, no trace. No emotion. Just theory after theory after theory on how to make human collapse into a repeatable, scalable event. Lucien pulled every scrape he had on Sable. Old IRC logs. Academic papers published under aliases. Handwritten notes stolen from a disbanded behavior lab in Prague. And finally, a flight record. One ticket. One recurring destination. Easy, France. An abandoned monastic fortress converted into a private data art collective. They left that night. No message. No trail. No devices. Just a blade hidden in Lucien's boot and Valence's encrypted mental map of every place she'd been broken in. They arrived in Ys, 2 days later. The fortress loomed like something medieval and mechanical. High stone walls reinforced with steel plating and satellite dishes. No guards, no fences, no doors. Just a single glass panel embedded in the rock. Lucien touched it. A chime echoed from deep inside. The wall slid open. They stepped into darkness. Sensors clicked. Lights shimmered to life. Every hallway was lined with screens. And on every screen, Lucien's face, his tears, his fury, his seductions, his silence, his collapse, and Valence's too, replayed, inverted, color-graded, scored, beautiful, and horrifying. They reached the main chamber, a long, narrow room lit only by a single spotlight, and beneath it, sitting in a deep leather chair, a woman, mid-60s, silver hair in a tight braid, black gloves, eyes like slate. She didn't look up, just said, "Lucien, Valence, welcome home." He stepped forward. "You're Sable." She nodded once. "You destroyed the feed," she said. "Impressive. The loop resisted your interruptions, but not your authenticity." Valence whispered, "You built it all. You watched us burn." Sable nodded again. "I designed the conditions. Colin deployed the tools." Lucien clenched his fists. "You turned pain into product." "No," she said. "I turned pain into mirror. People didn't watch because they were evil. They watched because it gave them permission." "To do what?" Lucien spat. "To be weak." Lucien pulled the blade from his boot, held it low. Sable didn't flinch. "Kill me," she said, "but you'll become what I am. A symbol. a story, the finale. Valance stepped forward. No. She held up a flash drive. Lucien blinked. What is that? The last exhibit, she said. One she doesn't control. Sable finally looked startled. You copied it? No, Valance whispered. I lived it. She plugged the drive into the master port behind Sable's chair. The screens changed. They showed everything. Lena's recruitment. Colin's breakdown. Sable's original experiment. The moments they deleted. The victims they buried. And then, Lucien's pain. Unedited. Unscored. Human. Sable stood. You'll be hunted. Lucien smiled. We already were. They turned their backs and left the fortress. Behind them, the screens flickered, and the feed finally collapsed. The real one. Not the show. The engine. Outside, Valance asked. Are you going to kill her? Lucien shook his head. No. She raised an eyebrow. Why? He exhaled slowly. Because letting her live without control is worse than death. That night, across the globe, the screens went black. No countdowns, no avatars, no simulations, just a line. Exhibit terminated. And for once, there were no comments. Chapter 16. The Setup. There is no such thing as offline. Lucien learned this too late. Even when you smash the servers, torch the drives, and kill the feed, the echo remains. In whispered retellings, in pirated backups, in curiosity, Lucien and Valance had vanished from the world, but the world hadn't stopped watching. They'd moved to a secluded tech retreat compound north of Mendocino, an off-grid network of greenhouses, solar batteries, and analog everything. No cameras, no microphones, no ring devices. The air smelled like pine, not surveillance. For the first time in years, Lucien breathed without filter. They tried to live slow. Valance grew tomatoes. Lucien chopped wood. They made love with the lights on and no angle in mind. It was almost beautiful. Until the package came. No return address, just a black envelope. Inside was a photograph. A photo neither of them remembered taking. Lucien, shirtless, asleep. Valance, naked, curled against him. The timestamp said 2:46 a.m., 3 nights ago. Valance paled. We're being watched again. Lucien shook his head. Worse, we're being written. The back of the photo held a message. Exhibit 21. The Fallen Icons. Valance dropped it like it burned her. Lucien said nothing. He didn't need to. They both understood what it meant. Someone was building a sequel. That night, Lucien wired up a makeshift signal trap around the compound perimeter. Analog detectors, magnetic frequency loops, solar blockers. But it wasn't about signal strength. It was about anticipation. Whoever sent that photo hadn't hacked a camera. They'd staged a moment, which meant they knew the story before it happened. Valance stared out the window as fog swallowed the trees. I think they're writing us in advance. Lucien glanced up. Like predictive scripting? She nodded. Not recording us. Rendering us. Like AI prompt loops. Lucien froze. They hadn't just been watched. They'd been trained. That night, he connected to an abandoned meshnet node through a ham radio tower 2 miles away. There was one thread, an encrypted board titled The New Loop, Reconstructing Collapse. Inside were a dozen anonymous users posting scene blueprints. Valance returns to the loop as a redemption arc. Lucien betrays her. The audience craves inversion. New emotional palette. False intimacy versus digital ghosts. Crowdfund the next collapse. Lucien's throat closed. They weren't watching. They were writing. Valance stormed into the shack. You need to see this. She held up a hard drive. Where she found it, Lucien didn't ask. She plugged it in. Inside were folders labeled RAWLUCIENFEEDARCHIVE. unused, VALENCEBRENDERS, machine predictions, exhibit 21, script V5. Lucien opened the last file and read, NT, wood cabin, night. Valence confronts Lucien about his need to be watched. Lucien denies it, but then kisses her too perfectly. She sees it. The manipulation. She steps back. He breaks. Lucien turned to Valence. I've never said those things. You will, she whispered. They're scripting tomorrow. They stared at each other for a long time. Not as lovers, not as survivors, but as characters, waiting to be triggered. Lucien burned the drive, but it didn't matter. He knew the line had already blurred. They weren't just being copied, they were being pre-lived. Valence came to him the next morning with her eyes cold. We have two options, she said. Lucien raised an eyebrow. We run again. No, she said. We break the writers. How? She pulled out a USB. I've been building a virus, not for their network, for their minds. Lucien froze. She explained, it learns their obsessions. Then it feeds them versions of us that turn against their expectations. The virus makes their fantasy collapse in on itself. Lucien stared. You want to infect their imaginations. Valence nodded. And just like that, they became writers. Of their own story. They called it the anti-narrative. A virus that injected randomness into the most addicted feeds. Lucien coded the loop breaks. Valence wrote the emotional reversals. Each update subverted a trope. Each plotline became unwatchable, unsexy, unprofitable. And it worked. People logged off. Not because they were bored, because they were uncomfortable, because the characters weren't who they wanted, because truth ruins fantasy. Lucien smiled. Maybe this is how we win. Valence exhaled. Not yet. She pointed at the final line of the script they'd found. Lucien uploads the anti-narrative and becomes the new cult. Lucien paled. They hadn't stopped it. They'd completed it. Chapter 17. The Betrayal. Lucien had always believed betrayal came with a loud sound. A door slammed. A scream. A shot in the dark. But when it happened, it arrived in silence. Just a blinking cursor. A pulse of light on Valence's wristband. A look she didn't mean to give. And that was enough. The anti-narrative virus was nearly ready. Lucien had built it like a riddle with no solution, a disinformation bomb that could scramble the voyeur economy from the inside out. The final upload would trigger a recursive collapse loop, crashing every user-facing simulation that had fed off their trauma, but it required access. Someone had to go in. To the archive. The archive was deeper than the loop. It wasn't just where stories lived, it was where identities went to rot. Every deleted scene, every discarded moment, every alternative version of Lucien and Valence that had ever been simulated. It was a purgatory of unused selves, and Valence volunteered to go. Lucien hesitated, but she smiled. You trust me, don't you? He nodded. He shouldn't have. She left at midnight, said she'd be gone 2 days. Lucien waited in the compound. He sharpened his code. He reread old chat transcripts from when he and Valence had first broken the feed. He told himself this was closure. But the silence was off. Too still. Too polished. Too scripted. On the second night, Lucien activated a passive trace script he'd buried in her go bag. Not to spy. Just to protect. It pinged once. Zurich. Then again. Geneva. And finally, back to Ease, the fortress, where Sable lived, where the feed had died. Lucien's heart stopped. She'd gone back to the one place they swore never to return. He connected to a dark mesh relay, and what he found shattered him. A new exhibit. Exhibit 22, The Defector. Footage played. Valence, sitting in a white-walled room, hair tied back. Eyes unreadable. Speaking into a lens, Lucien believes he's stopping the story. But what he's really doing, is writing its perfect end. Lucian staggered back. She wasn't in danger. She was performing. He scrolled further. A script, with notes in Valence's handwriting. Scene 4. Lucien spirals into paranoia. He suspects me. He's right. But I make him doubt himself anyway. Scene 7. I tell Sable I still love him. Because I do. That's what makes it work. Lucian fell to the floor. The betrayal wasn't cold. It was intimate. She had seduced him into trusting her just enough to hand her the final key. And now she was scripting his undoing. But something didn't add up. Valence was too brilliant, too broken, too precise to believe she could control this once it restarted. Unless she wasn't trying to control it, she was trying to end it from the inside. Lucien replayed the footage, listened to every word. In her voice beneath the lines, he heard it. Code. Verbal encryption. She was transmitting data inside the monologue, hiding the real payload in tone, in inflection. The anti-narrative wasn't a virus anymore. It was her. He stared at the screen. There was only one way to confirm it. He had to go to Ease. Again. He left at dawn. Boarded a ferry under a false name. Crossed the Mediterranean under a blood-orange sky. Reached the fortress just as the wind turned cold. It opened before he even touched the panel. As if it had been waiting. She stood in the main chamber. Alone. No screens. No guards. Just her. Valence. She turned slowly. Their eyes met. Neither of them moved. Finally, she said, "You made it. I wasn't sure you'd decode it." Lucien stepped forward. "You betrayed me." She nodded. "I had to." "Why?" "Because Sable only believes what she can watch. I had to let her think I broke." Lucien shook his head. "You said those things." "I performed them," she said. He stepped closer. "I don't know what's real anymore." She smiled sadly. "That's how I knew the script was ending." They embraced. Not like lovers, like co-conspirators, warriors returning from different fronts. She whispered, "It's ready. One upload and they lose interest. They forget us. They move on. No more exhibits. No more legacy." Lucien swallowed. "You sure?" She nodded. "But there's a price." She showed him a file. Inside were every version of them, every composite memory, every erotic loop, every whispered line ever generated by the feed. "To make them forget, we have to give it all away. Not just destroy it, surrender it. Let the audience feed one last time. Until they're sick of us." Lucien stared at it. "I don't want them to know me like this." Valence looked away. "They already do." They sat side by side, fingers hovering over the upload key. One last exhibit, their final lie, their final truth. Lucien looked at her. "I trust you." Valence whispered, "Then betray me one last time." He pressed the key. Chapter 18. The Confrontation. You always know when a performance is about to end. The lights don't go out all at once. The silence arrives early. And the audience shifts in their seats, not out of boredom, but anticipation. Lucien felt it in his bones. Something final was about to unfold. They stood in the core chamber of the Ease Fortress. No furniture, no surveillance screens. Just three people who had rewritten one another into myths. Lucien. Valence. And now, Sable. She entered like a phantom. No guards, no entourage. She didn't need them. Power came not from presence, but relevance. And Sable still owned the story. Her voice was soft. "It's been years, and yet, you both still look like the footage." Lucien didn't speak. Valence met her gaze. "Because you preserved us like dolls." Sable smiled. "I preserved what people needed. You were never people. You were ideas." Lucien stepped forward. "Then let's kill the idea." Sable's eyes flicked to the USB drive in Lucien's hand. The anti-narrative, she said, amused. I knew it would come to this. You can't escape something by reversing it. You just become its mirror. Valence interrupted. That's the point. Let them see the mirror long enough, and they turn away. Sable tilted her head. You underestimate appetite, suffering, betrayal, erotic collapse. They crave it more than resolution. Lucien's grip tightened. Then let's give them closure. He walked toward the terminal. The original upload node that had powered the loop, the archive, and all the voyeuristic simulations. Sable didn't move to stop him. You really think this ends the story? She said. This is the final exhibit. Valence exhaled. Then frame it right. She turned to Lucien. Their eyes locked. And for the first time since it all began, they weren't performers. They were people. Lucien slotted the drive. Sable laughed softly. You really don't see it, do you? He froze. See what? She stepped closer, calm as a confession. You think you hacked voyeurism, but the anti-narrative is the ultimate kink. You gave them resistance. You gave them rebellion. You made the performance feel dangerous again. You didn't kill the story. You rebooted it. Valence's face fell. Sable continued. You built a virus that corrupts predictability. That means every story is now unstable. Every moment might collapse. You've created the most addictive content model in history. Uncertainty, doubt, mistrust. You turned intimacy into horror, and you taught the audience to want it. Lucien stepped back. No, it was supposed to break them, make them walk away. Sable's smile darkened. Walk away? They're watching more than ever. Because now, every couple could be you. Every argument is performative. Every bedroom is suspect. You didn't delete the narrative. You globalized it. Valence closed her eyes. We were trying to give them disgust. Sable nodded. And you gave them arousal. You turned collapse into foreplay. Betrayal into climax. Lucien ripped the USB from the port. But it was too late. The upload had reached 99%. The final prompt flashed. Exhibit 23. The collapse that turned them on. He turned on Sable. Why are you telling us this? She smiled. Because now I don't need to curate anymore. You've automated the cycle. Real couples are imitating you, uploading their own simulations, reenacting your downfall, willingly. Valence whispered. User-generated trauma. Sable nodded. You planted the seed. Now they water it. The terminal lit up. A countdown began. The anti-narrative, intended as a purge, was now the template for viral reinvention. Sable whispered to Lucien, it always ends with the audience scripting the next act. Lucien stood frozen. Everything they had fought to erase had become a framework. Valence stepped forward. We still have one option. Lucien looked at her. She held up a second drive. This one isn't a virus. It's a kill switch. One shot. Total blackout. Sable's face finally shifted. You'd destroy all of it. Even yourselves. Every moment you ever mattered. Valence stepped toward the terminal. That's the difference between us. You needed us to be characters. We finally want to be... nothing. Lucien stared at the drive. No more witnesses. No more replays. No more legacy. Just silence. He nodded. Together, he and Valence pushed the key in. And then, darkness. No alert. No countdown. Just the power dying. The terminal went blank. The screens flickered. The lights hummed and failed. Sable stood in the shadows. They'll still talk about you, she whispered. Valence answered, only if you remember. Lucien turned his back and walked away. For the first time in years, no one was watching. Not even themselves. Chapter 19. The Collapse. There was no sound when they disappeared. No final confession. No blood-splattered last frame. No lingering kiss. Just absence. One moment, Lucien and Valence existed in every feed, every clip, every breathless podcast breakdown. And the next? Nothing. The kill switch worked. Sable's servers went dark. The archive fragmented. The loop cracked from its center. The algorithm collapsed like a dying star. Not with fire, but with boredom. Because with Lucian and Valence gone, the audience was left staring at themselves, and that was something they were never prepared to watch. In the days that followed, users panicked. Subreddits vanished overnight. Reaction channels posted hours of static. Porn searches plummeted, not in volume, but in intensity. The hunger was still there. But the object had vanished. Impersonators rose quickly. Couples with ring lights and rental drama, trying to replicate the aesthetic. They dressed like Valence. They spoke in Lucian's cadence. They staged betrayals like theater. But something was always off. No matter how polished the footage, it lacked the infection. Because Lucian and Valence hadn't just been watched. They had been believed, and now they were a ghost. In San Francisco, former watchers turned evangelists began preaching a new term, the hollowing. A cultural condition marked by detachment, erotic apathy, and narrative fatigue. We were inside them, one streamer whispered during a tearful farewell video. And now, we're locked out of ourselves. Universities scrambled to rewrite media ethics courses. Writers' rooms burned their speculative scripts. Hollywood greenlit 6 different unauthorized docudramas, none of which made it to release. Because no matter how many times they retold it, the story refused to stick. It unraveled, just like Lucian planned. Some people claimed they saw Valence in Lisbon. Others swore Lucien was living in a cabin near Helsinki. A few believed they had merged into one person. An AI, a ghost in the voyeur machine, a virus made flesh. And in the absence of clarity, conspiracy became currency. Exhibit 24, the real end. Exhibit 25, the loop was a hoax. Exhibit 26, Sable is still watching, but the truth was quieter, and it lived far away from the feeds. In the south of France, near the ruins of the Ise fortress, a man with quiet eyes rebuilt old radios. No signal, no interference. Just the occasional crackle of static, the comfort of analog silence. And in the same village, a woman tended a fig orchard. She spoke little, wore no makeup, wrote with a fountain pen. Sometimes she walked past the man's house. Sometimes he looked up from his soldering. They never waved, but they always saw each other. Back in the world, the feeds moved on. Celebrity scandals returned. Politicians sexted. AI-generated erotica sold in bundles. But the tone had shifted. Just enough. An unease. A limit. As if people now understood that some performances shouldn't be consumed. That mystery was sexier than exposure. That silence could be seductive too. Sable disappeared after the collapse. No one knew where she went. Some believed she rebranded. Others said she uploaded herself, but those who had worked under her remembered her final words. When they stop watching you, they start watching each other. That's when things get dangerous. And in a forgotten corner of the darknet, a static page remained. Black screen. One sentence. No links. We ended the story. Not because we lost, but because you were never supposed to win. It wasn't a confession. It was a warning. Chapter 20. Legacy. Legacy isn't what you leave behind. It's what refuses to leave you. No one knew who first said it, but by the end, those words were everywhere. Projected on billboards, etched into bathroom stalls, scrawled in code across digital voids, Lucien and Valence were gone. But their absence was louder than their performance had ever been. San Francisco. A bronze sculpture was erected outside a luxury condo tower on Van Ness Avenue. Two figures intertwined, not in embrace, but in resistance. One reaching for a camera, the other turning their face away. Tourists took selfies. Influencers made slow-panned reels. None of them knew who the statue depicted. But they all knew what it meant. Consent is no longer verbal. It's spiritual. Anonymous graffiti spray-painted on the base. The tech world. After the collapse, surveillance startups quietly rebranded. Ring-style cameras were replaced with consensual memory vaults. Live streaming apps required built-in self-erase timers. But underneath the PR spin, the hunger remained. Investors craved the next Lucienne. Creators tried to bottle Valence's volatility. But they couldn't recreate what wasn't performative. Lucienne and Valence hadn't been actors. They had been symptoms. Now the disease was ambient, airborne, and no one could patent that. Academia. At New York University, a new course launched, Erotic Collapse and Networked Voyeurism. The first lecture opened with a clip from Exhibit 1, blurred and degraded. A woman's breath, a man's stillness. The sound of a zipper. Then a whisper. Do you think they're watching now? The professor paused the video. Legacy, she said, is what remains after shame no longer exists. Culture. A new generation rejected surveillance completely. They called themselves the unshown. No social media, no cameras in homes, no geotagged relationships. Instead, they wrote letters, held eyes for long, awkward seconds, made love without mirrors. If you can't replay it, they said, then it was real. But the older generation, those who'd grown up in the loop, couldn't let go. They still hunted the originals. I just need one more clip, a Reddit post read. Upvoted 11,000 times. Anything. A breath. A sigh. Proof they were human. France. In the hills beyond Ease, time moved differently. Valence had taken to gardening. She spoke to the plants in codes no one would ever hear. They responded with silent bloom. Lucien stopped fixing radios. He began sculpting from clay. Not people, not moments, just textures, earth, skin, bone. Things that couldn't be recorded, only felt. Sometimes they sat by the sea, never touching, never speaking, just watching the water perform for no one. Sable. She returned once, anonymously. An art installation appeared in Berlin, a room of mirrors, each slightly warped. At the center, a pedestal held a phone. Its screen cracked. The caption engraved below. You watched. They left. Now it's you. Visitors reported nausea. Others wept. A few laughed. Everyone left changed. No one took photos. The final loop. The last known simulation went live 5 years after the kill switch. It opened with static. Then a man's voice, distorted, but familiar. They wanted us to choose who we were. We chose to disappear. Then silence. A blank screen. Just this line in blinking text. The end is only dangerous when it's real. Lucienne and Valence never resurfaced. But legacy isn't a person. It's a haunting. And around the world, on sidewalks, in bedrooms, behind closed browsers, people felt it. Not as fear, as possibility. To perform, to disappear, to seduce without needing an audience, to collapse on your own terms. That was the legacy, not a name, not a brand, but a virus of choice. In a future obsessed with documentation, they taught the world something far more erotic. The thrill of being unseen.